Business on Heart 1027.
Now, you'll know that Operation Vulindlela was launched during the economic wreckage of the pandemic as government's flagship reform drive. And phase two now promises to go even further, tackling everything from grid bottlenecks and freight rail dysfunction to housing, water and municipal decay. But this is my question. Is this just another lofty roadmap, or is it going to do something meaningful to lift, to shift South Africa's growth trajectory? With me now is Rudy Dix, who's at the center of all of this. He's head of project management in the presidency. And let's talk about some of the claims and the realities behind them. So, Rudy, a very warm welcome. And let's start with this. How do you rate the actual impact of phase one on things like GDP growth, unemployment and private investment so far? I mean, is there any evidence of a significant improvement here?
Well, no evidence yet, Jeremy, because that's ultimately what we want to see. We want to see that what we do impacts on gross fixed capital formation and on employment, right? And so the reforms are still at a very beginning stage, and you've got to carry through. So lots of the investments, for example, around private generation, the logistics, for example, on opening up the rail network and the concessioning of the ports. These are important things that would have impact as soon as they carry through. They're not reflected as much as it would be in the growth figures, but certainly in the gross fixed capital formation, you'll see a little bit of an uptick in the last year and a half in fixed investments, and that's quite important. So we've got to work pretty hard. It's about creating confidence. It's about getting investors to understand that the reform is about opening up the economy and that we're creating opportunities for private investment.
Let's look at phase two now. Dozens of reforms have been listed, electricity, water, logistics, digital IDs, et cetera, et cetera. But in your opinion, then, what are the top three measurable priorities here?
Just to correct you, they're not dozens. I mean, they're seven, right? We'll continue with electricity reforms, and that's going to be important. I mean, from a network perspective, electricity and logistics are fundamental. Those are the ones that drive economic growth. Those are the ones that create confidence and investment. So we'll continue to focus and carry through those reforms. The three new reforms are also going to be critical for us because they talk about the inclusivity of the kind of structural changes that we want to see. So this relates to local government, and it's about the coalface of delivery. It's about basic services, it's about better functioning utilities, professionalization, making sure that services are delivered towards citizens and to businesses. Spatial inequality, again, also very transformative. How do we create densifications of cities, get people close to where they work or where they or places of where they shop, using public transport, having different models of developing housing and housing developments, using land. Thirdly, also digital and digital transformations. So those are critical. No-brainer. Digital identification and digital payments, right? These are such an important part of efficiencies and ensuring that we bring people into a digital system that allows us to be able to target much, much, much better. So these are going to be an important part of continuing old reforms and specifically focusing on the network sectors, but also look at a more inclusive set of reforms, those three new ones that we've announced at phase two as well.
Rudy, service delivery is a well-worn trope in South Africa. How do you light a rocket under local government in order to progress that, given that there has been a large history of failure?
Absolutely. I've said it on countless occasions, Jeremy. We acknowledge that it's no easy task, right? There are a whole series of complexities. Firstly, legislative and constitutional complexities, where there are quite distinct laws that are provided for functioning of municipalities. It's not simply coming into the space, parachuting and telling municipalities what we do. We don't have that authority. We've got to work in an intergovernmental relations framework, collaborative approach. But already we've seen some signs of that collaboration in eThekwini, for example, and more recently in the city of Johannesburg. It's about getting the municipalities and working with them in a manner that understands that service delivery and accountability is going to be important. So we want to develop a collaborative approach. It's not about the stick. It's not about using legislation to enforce service delivery. It's about going back to the basics and ensuring that we design utilities, for example, and the functions of investments in utility responsibilities, distribution for both water and electricity, servicing, fixing roads. These are going to be important things. And we've got to develop strong accountability mechanisms. So it's no easy task. it's going to be a challenging and an important task, but at least I think for both eThekwini and City of Johannesburg, as I explained, there are some really good green shoots showing around how we can collaborate between three spheres of government.
But surely at some point you've got to bring out that stick, given that there is a history of corruption and inefficiency in many of those nodes.
Perhaps incentives is a good way of trying to do it, right? Because those are important. Part of the reform, for example, on professionalizing and creating efficient utility services that could have ring-fence funding and to ensure that they put money back into maintaining and expanding infrastructure is what is currently happening with the trading services reform. So you could do it through incentives, but you know, part of the process of local government is also, as you see, one of the reforms is the policy reform on the white paper for local government. Now, we've never done any changes since the dawn of democracy around local government. So those are certainly areas of consideration to take into consideration when we do look at the policy paper on local government, and which is the white paper process around how do we enhance and ensure greater levels of accountability and hold people, feet to fire. You know, that's going to be important.
So when it comes to local government then, which we've discussed what the issues are, surely there would be some concern about extending the Public Service Commission's mandate and any difference it's going to make on corruption, as I've mentioned, and even cadre deployment.
It would, because the professionalization framework is quite critical. Remember, the Public Service Commission is already an important institution that, for example, myself, as a bureaucrat at a national level, I'm covered by the Public Service Commission. And certainly the current legislative amendments on there is looking at doing that. But it's not just about corruption, but it's also about the professionalization. Importantly, given the changing dynamics in the political environment, you know, in coalition politics, that we've got to have a clear separation between the bureaucracy and the elected leaders. We got to continue doing service delivery and ensuring that government functions. Political leaders come and go during elections. That's the most important part. And I think we got to do that at a local government level as well. And that's an important thing. You know, we're professional. We don't play part to politics. It's about ensuring that we ensure that the wheels of government continue to turn.
Rudy Dix, thank you very much indeed. Head of Project Management in the Presidency. I do appreciate your time. Thank you.
Heart Business on Heart 1027.